Okay, welcome to the MacGuffin Man.
Yeah, welcome to the MacGuffin Man. I'm Alex.
I'm Alex.
And with me, as usual, is James. Before we get started, we just wanted to get you to check out our previous episodes. The Oscars are on Sunday, and we've talked about most of the good notable movies. Yeah, we've talked about Gravity, Captain Phillips, American Hustle, Wolf of Wall Street, Inside Llewyn Davis, Her, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, among others. And yeah, check those out on our website, themacguffinmen.com, and also be sure to follow us on Twitter, at themacguffinmen, all one word, no underscores, nothing like that. And yeah, follow us for updates. And our next podcasts next week will be about the Oscars, the ceremony itself. I think we're going to have Josh come and join us to chat about the ceremony, and then whatever wins Best Picture, James and I will talk about. If American Hustle wins, then we'll just replay our podcast on American Hustle, or maybe talk about Boogie Nights, who knows. But yeah, be sure to check those out. And also we'll be doing a mini-sode or full episode on Nonstop, the new Liam Neeson jam. So yeah, be sure to come back next week. But for now, let's talk about Black Mirror.
Welcome to the MacGuffin Men. And now, here are Alex and James.
The theme song?
I mean, we just came back from the theme song.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. yeah, Black Mirror.
Yeah.
Let's put this episode in the four listeners category.
Yeah, exactly.
Along with Assassination of Jesse James.
Yeah, Kevin is amped up about this one, though. He doesn't even know it exists yet, but he's excited.
Okay.
Yeah.
We might get Walsh to listen too.
Yeah. And Chalister's into it.
Yeah. He hasn't seen it, but that doesn't stop him anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Black Mirror.
No, I'm not done alienating other people by shouting out the few people we know yet. No, I'm kidding. Continue.
That we always share.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Black Mirror is a BBC show of somewhat recently, the last 2 years. There's probably going to be a bit more coming out this year at an undetermined time, it seems. Mm-hmm. How did you find out about this show?
About a year ago, I think during the second series when that was airing, it was mentioned in passing on a podcast I listened to, and by somebody who I find tends to like interesting things. So I was like, oh yeah, maybe I'll check that out. And then heard about it from that, and then, you know, around Christmas this year, our friend, mutual friend Kevin, was like, hey, you should watch Black Mirror. And I was like, yes, I think I will very shortly. And then you were like, hey, you should watch Black Mirror. And then I did.
Okay,
so yeah.
And
I spent Christmas 2013 spending a lot thinking about our relationship to technology. A lot of time. Sorry.
Show of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a BBC show. It's kind of, I guess the best way to describe it is a social media based Twilight Zone, I think.
Okay.
Maybe not always social media, but technology based.
Yeah.
So, you know, different every episode is a whole new set of characters, new cast, new setting, either kind of what appears to be alternate universe or slightly in the future, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of like the, you know, Her. You know, it's just like it's a recognizable world, but it's different from ours.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And yeah, as I said, usually a pessimistic view of technology, I would say.
Yeah, yes, I would agree with that.
Yeah, so far, 2 seasons, 3 episodes per season, or series, as British people like to say, which I hate. So, yeah, we're just going to go.
Speaking of things about British people that I hate the term nice one.
Oh, really?
It so much.
I like that one.
Oh.
And I like Liam a lot. But anyway, we're going to do this in order. So just by the episode's airing date. So we're going to start with season 1, episode 1, National Anthem.
Yep.
So I've recommended this show to people, and I kind of warned them, don't let the first episode or the first 6 minutes of the first episode throw you off.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've kind of had people unsure whether this is funny or this is just a weird sexual perverse show or what.
Mm-hmm.
But as I said, every episode's so much different, and this one kind of eases you into the technology thing. Like, this one is so this world is so similar to our world.
Yeah, I feel like this is the most accessible of the six episodes.
It's the most, as I said, it's the most similar to the real world, I guess. But I just don't think it's the best episode. And I think it's so reliant on the idea of a human having sex with a pig on TV. And that's just an uncomfortable thought that I think maybe it's a little weird for people. But I guess it is pretty accessible just because of how similar the world is to ours.
Yeah, and just sort of the way it's structured, like an engaging sort of, I don't know, not action movie, but I suppose thriller, to use a word I hate. It's just sort of like it's a...
Nice one.
Great. Great work. I don't know, it's just structured in a way that's much more easy to get the average viewer to watch, you know, than the entire history of You or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
And the whole thing that's good about the national anthem is that it's sort of like, it feels like David Fincher, like the director was watching a lot of David Fincher's, and it moves at that sort of pace. And it's just sort of this really analytical look at really fast paced analytical look at how basically every aspect of society would react to this, you know? And that's why I think it's very accessible. I think it's good. I think the fact that it doesn't really leave much to think about after it's over because of how I think how like all the questions are answered, you know? And
yeah.
And I think that's sort of why I spend less time thinking about it, but it's also why I think it was a great choice for like the first one. Certainly of these three, a good choice. Yeah, I don't know. I just think it's very accessible.
Yeah, I know. I think so. And I like that, you know, it does start slowly. I mean, it's just them in bed kind of waking up to a vibrating cell phone and then a slow conversation as we watch the ransom tape, I guess. But then once that gets out in the open, yes, it once it picks up, just the clip really doesn't let up for the entire episode. And one thing I love about the show is how quickly they establish these worlds and then kind of play around with them.
Yeah.
All in under an hour. Like, as you said, we're getting every part of society. We're getting a very in-depth view of the prime minister and kind of his immediate circle and how they're dealing with it. We get the media angle. We get all that stuff at UKN about how to deal with it, whether or not to break the story, even though there's that type 5D notice on it, which, again, they don't really spoon feed us exactly what that means. But in the context, you know, you can put it together really quickly. And then that just allows the episodes to move so quickly and cover so much ground. And even such a small thing like the relationship between that female reporter, Malik or something.
Malika, I believe.
Malika, yeah. And, you know, one of the guys who works at 10 Downing Street.
Yeah, British Chris Evans.
yeah, British Chris Evans. I guess I didn't see that name in the credits. yeah, but I mean, that gets established so quickly and is still so effective. Like, it doesn't feel cheap. It feels like we see just enough of it without, you know, them really, you know, holding our hands and walking us through it. And, you know, it would cover so much. And then we also get just the public angle. We get at all those people at their jobs and at their home watching TV.
Or the guy lying in bed, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, they do that so quickly. And those great hospital workers who apparently don't tend to patients for an hour.
But love Lars von Trier. Yeah. I think maybe that's why they don't tend to patients, because Lars von Trier is all about nothing's worth anything. And it's just like, we like Dogma 95. We don't like you.
We went to the Werner Herzog School of Medicine, where we can let people die and let nature take its course. this one, as I said, is it's so contemporary. Like, this is so modern, like so real and so relevant to kind of our world. And
yeah, the world that this one exists in is basically like, this is a thing that could happen tomorrow and the reactions would be pretty similar.
Yeah, exactly. This isn't kind of where we're heading. Like, this is a situation that hasn't happened, but it's very possible that it could, and this would be, I'm guessing, pretty close to the reaction.
And I think so.
And about, you know, setting those characters up so quickly, I love when they're talking about Princess Susan and call her the Facebook princess. Mm-hmm. She's so quickly established as kind of this mix between, like, Princess Di and Kate Middleton.
Yep.
And it's just this amalgamation of characters that, you know, real world characters that we know. And it's just so easy for us to see their place in society because we have these kind of touchstones, and immediately we can, you know, think about them the way that they would be thought about in our world.
Yeah, and she attends the Children of Valor Awards, which is a name I found so funny.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. What are the two most positive sounding things for a charity? Bravery and children. Yeah. Yep. Good. Do that. Yeah. Yeah. And just it's small stuff, like when they're talking about it.
When they're when the Prime Minister's watching the raid on that warehouse, I guess. I mean, we've all seen images of Obama watching the Osama bin Laden raid, you know? So it's just sort of, it's that, these things that we can very easily tie into, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. What I was going to say was when they're doing reports about her, you see they call her the Facebook princess after announcing their engagement online. Like, mm-hmm. it's just so, so modern and, you know, so relatable, and they do that so quickly, even if it's just a little thing on the side of the screen, on our screen, you know, it's such a small thing, but yeah. They do show the importance of social media. Like, mm-hmm. This would be, as I said, a lot of them are about technology, some of them are about social media. This is one of the big ones, I think, that would be about social media, and really without forcing it down our throats, they really relate everything through that, not mm-hmm. just calling her the Facebook princess for, you know, announcing her engagement like that, but when they're talking about how the story has already left the room, when the Prime Minister right at the start says, you know, no one outside of this room hears the story, they say, well, it already has 50,000 YouTube views. And then when the story's really breaking and they're reporting on it, they measure the story through, you know, there's 10,000 tweets per minute on this subject. Mm-hmm. And just that's their game episode. Like, you see so much of exactly how famous this is, exactly how big the story is, exactly how it's already too late to stop it is measured purely in hits and tweets and views and mentions. So it's not a crazy profound way to do it. I think it's exactly how people would do it now, and it describes exactly how a story's already broken.
Yeah, I have a question for you. Let's say this happens. Let's say this happens in North America. What would you be doing? Like, how? What would you be in, like, a pub watching this or whatever? Would you be watching it at home? Would you watch it at all?
Yeah, that's a question I was going to ask you too. I feel like I would, and I feel like the best thing to say is that you wouldn't be, but I don't think that's true. When they show those doctors and stuff that we were talking about, and one of them says, oh, but it's already been going on for an hour. I wouldn't watch an hour of this.
Yeah, I don't think any of those people would really watch an hour of that.
Yeah, especially that one woman who's just so disgusted by it. She would leave. A lot of people would leave. I think a lot of people would watch for 3 minutes, you know? Mm-hmm. They'd watch him, you know, take off his jacket, undo his pants, see the initial penetration, and then I think probably 10 seconds after that. So however long that takes, I think, is how long people would watch for. There definitely would be people watching the whole thing. I'm, you know, it's kind of disgusting to say I would watch any amount of bestiality, mm-hmm. because, you know, that's obviously disgusting, but just the curiosity. Like, I think that that's something that this episode does right. I don't think the streets of London would be as empty as that shows. I mean, you're not going to get a day off work for this. People still have to go do things. Yeah. But yes, the streets would be less busy. I think bars would be more full, and people would be, you know, even if they're at work, just watching it on their phone, watching it on another screen, doing something. I think this would get insanely high ratings. And, you know, as embarrassing it is, I would be one of them for a small amount of time.
Okay.
Would you watch?
I don't think I would. Because I'm trying to, like, I mean, there's not really a comparable real-life situation, but I sort of, generally when, you know, these big events happen, like, say, the Boston bombing last spring, when these things happen, like, I don't seek out any sort of, like, pictures of, or anything like that. You know, I might follow it on Twitter a bit, and I just sort of, you know, when the actual images come up, they don't bother me that much, you know, it's just, but I don't seek them out. So I feel like I would be on Twitter all day, but I don't think I would actually watch it.
Yeah, I think you kind of get the point where, just being kind of connected to it without watching it. I mean, so many people would be watching it, and as this episode shows, so many people would be posting about it and tweeting about it. You could very much get the sense of what happened secondhand. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, he fucked.
Yeah, I can imagine what somebody fucking pig looks like.
What did it look like? Yeah, you got it.
It looked like a fucking pig. Okay, great.
Yeah, you don't need it. I guess the curiosity would definitely get the best of me, though. I would, just to see that. But you would have to pay me a lot to sit through an hour of that. Like, even the 15 seconds of this is disgusting. When he's just crying and they're not even showing the act, they're just showing his face. Like, mm-hmm. That's awful. And that scene when he's just over the toilet and there's that stringy puke around, like, it's so gross. This episode makes me really uncomfortable, and not always. I mean, most of these episodes make me uncomfortable in a way, but this is a special kind of uncomfortable.
All right.
Yeah. How did you feel about the idea that the public turns on him when it goes public, that he tried to kind of sneak his way out of it? Did you buy that? Like, initially, kind of everyone saying that the terrorists are the bad guys, the kidnappers are the bad guys. No one really expects him to go through with their demands. And then that employee tweets out that picture of them getting Rod Senseless in to try to fake it. And then all of a sudden, the public turns on the prime minister. Do you buy that?
I don't know. Because, I mean, I don't know. Because, like, I can definitely see the immediate sort of Twitter reaction, just the people that would speak about it. There's just more people. I mean, like, if it's something you disagree with, you are more likely to publicly vocalize your opinion.
Yeah.
And I can see it sort of from that lens, just because the people that disagree would be more vocal than the people that do agree with the idea. So I think
fewer people would go on and be like, hey, nice try, then. Yeah. Be like, oh, what an awful person this
yeah
guy.
Exactly. Like, I think you just sort of have to think about the reaction that they could have possibly gauged, and I think the only reaction they could have gauged is the people that actually did choose to tweet.
Right.
So it might not, you know, in sort of the reality of this, public opinion might not be like that, like quite like how it reads, but just the public opinion that you can get that quickly, that's how it reads. You know?
Yeah, I see that. So. This episode really kind of overlooks the fact we don't kind of negotiate with terrorists or give in to ransoms is because, two things. One, there's no guarantee you're going to get her back. Like, mm-hmm. You might fuck a pig on TV and then they kill her anyway, and all of a sudden, you know, now you're that guy who fucked a pig and nothing positive came of it. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, it sets a precedent for other people to kidnap you or kidnap other people or take people hostage or do anything that they can make a demand from you.
Yeah.
So let's overlook that, because this show often takes these little leaps in logic just, you know, to give you something to think about. Like, this episode doesn't make sense because they ignore those things. But if you just overlook that, there's still so much to think about, and it's still such an interesting story. And
yeah, exactly. I mean, most sci-fi, you have to overlook a few things.
Yeah, that's true. And so a lot of these episodes, there's one little thing that you just kind of have to give them, and then overall, it's still just, you know, there's really fascinating ideas out there, then that's what you can deal with. Mm-hmm. But let's just say there was a complete guarantee that you get Susanna back if he fucks the pig. And I don't think I've ever said fuck the pig so much in my life. And that there's a total guarantee that this doesn't set any kind of precedent. Should he do it?
Yeah, I mean, with those circumstances, like, if you know 100% sure there won't be copycats and she will survive, then yeah.
Would it ruin his political career?
I mean, how much higher up can he get?
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, maybe he's seeking a second term.
Yeah, but he was the PM that was willing to be totally selfless. You know, he was somebody that was willing to fuck a pig for someone else's safety. Somebody else that has a longer, more influential life ahead of them, potentially.
Yeah, and I'm with you on this one. I do think that it would be the right thing to do, but do you think people would vote for someone like that? Do you think you know, international leaders could still take him seriously, because everyone would know about this right away?
Yeah.
Like, from a political standpoint, do you think
I would? Don't think there would be, it would be any more harmful than how basically, you know, all political relationships are now. There are just some people that just don't trust you, you know, like some countries just won't trust you anyway, because of your views on things. And now your views on pig fucking are one of those views. You know?
Yeah.
I really don't think it would. I think, you know, some people would change their minds, but I don't think it would be.
Anytime a politician does something, it's going to turn some people, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I guess this one is just about them being, I mean, you can have differences of opinion, but this one, it's harder to take them seriously. I don't think that's often the problem between world leaders, is not being taken seriously.
Yeah, and I mean,
fucking a pig might do.
And just, I mean, if you look at him in the actual scene, which, you know, everybody would be able to see, it's not like he's, you know, jumping at the opportunity, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So what did you think about the ending with us kind of walking down the bridge and the fact that she was freed 30 minutes before the deadline?
I was happy it wasn't sort of like a phone booth, Kiefer Sutherland phone booth type of thing, where they just have no motivation. But
I don't know what that means.
Okay, don't worry about it. Okay. Moral of the story is never watch phone booth. Okay. And yeah, I don't know. It was just sort of like, we're all spending too much time looking at our screens. That's what the resolution of it was for me. And like, this guy's a quote unquote artist. He's or I suppose actually an artist. He's so old world that he even has like the CRT TV to prove it. He's kind of got the only non-HD screen in the show.
Yeah.
So I think it's just sort of like, things were better before, you know, we were more focused or something. I don't know.
Right.
Or we were focusing on different things.
Yeah. I see. I thought that you might, dislike that ending, like just driving the point home a little too quickly. But
I will say I hate the last shot with him and his wife walking into the house. I hate that.
Why?
I think there's just like, it's just like, oh yeah, okay, it ruined their marriage, okay, fine. Like, it's just so unnecessary. I would have rather have that to think about as opposed to them just sort of like hammering it home, you know?
Yeah,
because like, it's a question you don't have to ask now.
Yeah. Do you think that she's kind of a bad person for reacting the way she does?
I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, because we kind of talked earlier about how it's a very selfless thing to do. And he, you know, as far as he knew at the time, was saving a woman's life by doing something that would ruin, possibly ruin his public image and at least be horribly, horribly beyond uncomfortable for an hour.
Yeah. I mean, we also don't know that they have a particularly great marriage anyway. Like, we don't see any signs of pre-pig struggles in their marriage, you know, but, you know, I don't know.
Okay. How do you feel about it as a piece of art? They say it's the first great artwork of the 20th
century. One controversial critic says that.
Yeah.
I don't know. If we're calling that art now, I think we're in trouble.
Yeah, it's hard to really define it. It's a very powerful statement, but I don't know about artwork.
Well, and it's a statement that never actually even gets out, right?
Right, because
like the actual statement doesn't make it to the public.
Right. Yeah, they do keep that hidden. I forgot that.
Like the one cop and those two people know about it, but they are swiftly paid off to not talk about it.
Yeah. Do you have anything else about the national anthem?
Nope.
I like the idea of them making that law to have it a criminal offense to keep any recording of this. You know, a very quickly enacted law that would be so difficult to ever enforce, but absolutely needs to be made. I think.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, the whole sort of like announcement right before is, I think, pretty good.
Yeah, and with the announcement and the sound that, you know, is supposed to make you nauseous or make it unpleasant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought that was something I wouldn't have ever thought of. Like that and making the recording illegal was something I didn't even consider until it gets mentioned and just made so much sense.
Yeah, for sure.
15 million merits?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I like this one a lot. I think this is kind of one of the weirdest ones, but one of the best. Like, this is the farthest I think we get from our society.
Yeah, well, yeah, definitely. I also think it's sort of, I don't know, I feel like I don't get a lot out of this. I think it's the best directed one, and sort of the best sort of feel, you know, just to the general episode. But as far as like the actual things, I just sort of feel, I don't know, I don't feel it's particularly strong, like the actual writing.
Okay. Mm. Yeah. Rewatching it, I enjoyed the music in this one, which
the music's great.
Yeah, which adds a lot to the kind of the feel what you were saying. The music's really good, and I like Bing. I like that actor at least. I think he's good in it.
Yeah, his perpetual shoulder slump of sadness kind of drove me crazy though.
And when he's uncomfortable in the washroom and he just looks up at the roof and keeps like can't maintain eye contact. Yeah. I thought that was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, this one, I guess, is not as much social media, more technology, and I guess just society and the idea of rebellion within society.
Yeah, and it just sort of feels like, I mean, just the way they spend their days, it's just, it sounds like an old man who's had like three too many drinks being like, we're all just spending our days on treadmills accruing merits to spend on bullshit and watching the few options that we have given to us that we actually have choice for. Like, it just sort of, it felt like things that I've gotten more strongly from other media products, you know.
Yeah, you're not nuts on kind of dystopian future stuff.
Well,
right?
I am, but I mean, if it's done well, it's the best. But I don't think this is, I just because it's sort of a sad future, like that alone isn't going to make me like something, you know?
Yeah. Oh, no. I don't think that's should be the only requirement. Yeah, exactly. At all.
Dystopian future? Sure. In Time is the greatest film of 2012.
Yeah. And actually, I didn't. But some of those ideas are in here, like the way skipping commercials costs money and the way that, you know, this currency, you know, these merits, this what you get from working so hard on the bikes, can be spent to skip commercials, which is essentially is just buying more of your time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think about something as small as getting the, you know, the premium version of an app on your phone instead of the free one, which, you know, has ads every 30 seconds that you have to sit through. Like, mm-hmm. It's just that little bit of money for a little bit more time. And it comes in such small doses and maybe it only costs $2, but it's that exchange of time for money, which is, you know, a pretty old concept. You know, technology is a time saver. Like, think of even back to dishwashers and washing machines. Like, you're buying something that will, you know, you're putting this money into it now in order to have more time to do whatever you want later.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
these are all just these very modern, tiny examples of it. And I definitely like this episode a lot more than you do, but it's some things like that I think they do really well. Another thing that I really like about dystopian future stuff, or one thing that is an indicator of when they do it well, is slang and language.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this one does it really well.
Mm-hmm.
Again, they don't spoon feed it to you, take it all out of, all in the context and piece it together. But like the first time I used the word doppel, you know, it kind of takes you a second to click doppelganger. Oh, it's his little avatar thing. They easily could have said avatar, but I like kind of that new language for it. I like that. I like that they just kind of drop it on you really quickly in a spot where you can pick it up. And yeah, I really like that. Also, calling someone a pie ape, another nice piece of slang that I've never heard before.
Yeah,
that guy's amazing. That asshole next to Bing on the bikes.
Yeah.
Might as well cut to a war crime.
Yeah.
I don't know. That guy makes me laugh really hard.
Yeah, I felt he was just so over the top. It's like,
oh, it's so much.
Of course, the guy that watches porn and reality shows is a horrible person. Yeah.
Yeah. And not even just reality shows, but like fat people suffering reality shows. Yeah. Like bother guts.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's a little much, but I was a fan.
Okay.
And I guess another big theme in this one is just very, very public sexuality. Mm-hmm. Like Wraith Babes being something acceptable to not just advertise but watch in public like that.
Yeah.
And I mean, reality shows in general obviously are a big part of this one and a big part of British culture. As big as they are here, they mm-hmm. really go nuts for that stuff over there. Mm-hmm. Having, you know, what's essentially you know, American Idol or Pop Idol or whatever, and
I think this is modeled after the X Factor, because I mean that's the big.
Oh, that's the British one. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, you have three people on the panel, and one of them is a pornographer and nothing else. Like that's pretty clear that things have changed so much in a way that I would not consider for the better.
Yeah.
So, what do you think of first of all Bing's dance routine and second his speech?
Bing's, I loved Bing's training montage.
Yeah, all the dance moves he kind of just turns down. I think he's like, well, is this the start of the Macarena? What is this? Yeah. Like, come on.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know. It's just sort of, he says it very, very early on in the speech. He just wants people to feel something instead of just processing things. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, I guess it didn't make me think about anything I haven't already thought about, you know?
Yeah, it's your kind of old man, few too many drinks in, like.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I mean, I'm 20-something. We thought of this already. Come on.
Yeah. We all had to read 1984.
Yeah, yeah, we've all read The Rebel Cell, you know?
We haven't all read The Rebel Cell, though. Well,
the two of us have all read The Rebel Cell.
the both of us. yes, but that I think.
Sorry, just to finish my point. The thing that makes me not like this episode is that it's my favorite elements of The Rebel Cell, my favorite elements of Fight Club, and my favorite elements of Enlightened all put together. And those are.
And done poorly.
Not done poorly. It's done amazingly. I think this is the best directed episode. It's the most patient episode. It's. Like so well put together. I just don't think the writing's there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
and did you not have a problem with like the drug juice box being called compliance? Like, did that not bother you?
It was cupliance.
Oh, was it cupliance?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's better.
It's a cute little pun.
Okay.
Yeah. Just about that juice. I love. It's just a little drug moment that. You know, doesn't much, but when she drinks it for the first time and Bing asks if she's okay, and she goes, yeah, everything's just a bit wider apart.
Yeah.
That's such a drugged up answer. Yeah. Like, that makes sense in her mm-hmm. head. It's such an abstract notion, but she's like, yeah, obviously, things are just wider apart now. Well, what?
Yeah. Well, that was one of the, there were two things I really liked about this episode. That was kind of one of them. The, you know, the idea that, you know, most performers will say that the reason they like performing is they feel it's like a drug. Most people that want to be famous sort of want to have that feeling, you know? And the other thing I liked about this episode a lot is Bing hearing, what's her name?
Abby?
Abby, yeah. Something like, and... like hearing her sing in the bathroom and just sort of the way that people encourage people that they feel are talented, possibly to the detriment of their own lives, like the other person's life. It's just sort of, oh, that's a talent. You can sing. You should do that for other people. And just the immediate thought process now that, oh, this is good. You should do this in a way that other people can experience it. And never sort of feeling like what the consequences of Bing saying that could be. And I found that really interesting. And I think
that she's very reluctant.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's sort of the most interesting part of this episode to me. And like, just even the idea of, you know, like you're in university and you find out somebody that your friends with can sing really well, it's like, oh, go for the freaking college glee club or whatever, you know, and never thinking about maybe them not getting into that might end up hurting them, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I found that really, really interesting.
And maybe they're just singing so you can't hear them pee.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I thought that was funny. Yeah. Yeah, no, speaking of The Rebel Cell, though, which I guess now that we've mentioned it a bunch of times, is a very good book about kind of taking subversive, somewhat rebellious parts of culture and co-opting them and packaging them to pop culture. Yeah, a lot of this episode covers that idea. And I think that's part of what I like a lot about this episode. I mean, I think it's done in a very direct, empirical way in The Rebel Cell, but this one kind of has a bit more fun with it and puts it in a fictional narrative.
Yeah.
anyway, in part of that speech that he says when he's got glass up to his neck. He's got the piece of glass up to his neck, ready to kill himself in front of everybody. He says, you know, show me something that's free and real and beautiful. And you couldn't. It'd break us. We're too numb for it. Our minds would choke. There's only so much wonder we can bear. That's why when you find anything real whatsoever, you dole it out in meager portions. And only then, until it's augmented and packaged and pumped through 10,000 pre-assigned filters, until it's nothing more than a meaningless series of lights. I like that. And I see how you feel it's something that's just done more powerfully somewhere else, but I really do like that part. And I think it really drives it home at the end when he gets his new show on his stream there, and he's still, you know, doing it with the piece of glass to his neck, even though there's clearly no way he's actually going to do something now. Like, he's kind of beat the system. He's kind of carved out this little sweet niche for himself.
He's become a Che Guevara t-shirt.
Exactly. Yeah. He's, you know, a symbol of rebellion with no actual substance to it. And then we see the, first at the end of his speech, in his first little episode, we see there, he says, farewell forever until the same time next week.
Yeah.
Which is kind of right on the nose of this idea of this completely contradictory idea of an ever present threat of suicide that's never going to happen. Mm-hmm. But I enjoy with the guy with the red hair buys the shard of glass so he can put it on his avatar.
Yeah.
I like that part a lot. And it's, it just, I think, speaks really well to everything he'd been rallying against and how he himself has been co-opted into this system. And, that jagged piece of glass, which was at one point, we can assume, a very real tool for possible suicide and something he was somewhat willing to go through with, has kind of just become a logo, and it's just another accessory for people to buy for their doppels, which was part of his speech about how bad society's become. So I just like how that symbol of his very real desperation and concern for society is just co-opted by mass culture and just monetized. And we kind of see, after he's given the speech and it ends with, you know, fuck you for sitting there, for making things slowly worse, to all the judges on Hot Shot, he's completely, very quickly, part of that same system. And
he trades his passion for a nicer view.
Yeah. And we don't really see his concern for Abby anymore, except he's got her little origami penguin there on the desk. But it looks like he's pretty much been lost to everything he'd been rallying against for this entire episode.
Yep.
So I thought that was good. Did you take the penguin to mean anything, that maybe he wasn't completely lost?
No. I mean, I think it's just sort of like, that's just guilt at that point, just to remind himself.
Yeah, it's just kind of maybe something he can look at to tell himself that he is still somewhat, you know, real. And I think you can hear my air quotes there. it's maybe something he can hold on to say, I'm not a complete sellout, when in reality that very much seems to be the case.
Yeah.
Anything else about 15 Million Merit?
Nope.
Boom. Moving on. The Entire History of You.
Yeah.
Final episode of season one.
Yeah.
Your jam?
Yeah.
Yes, I remember you saying this episode really kind of fucked with you. And it was before I had seen it, I believe. So I was very much looking forward to this episode, and it did not let me down.
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite good.
As a camera person.
I'm sorry?
As a camera person that you are?
Yeah, well, no. As somebody that thinks about memory a lot, has thought about some variation of a lot of the things in this episode, but never so well or so concisely. It's just great. Like, it's so good. Yeah.
I really like Liam too.
Yeah.
Like, he's such an asshole sometimes, but I think the actor just I guess just plays it so well and so believable that yes, this abusive, possibly alcoholic person is gets some sympathy from me. So
yeah, I had a question about the alcohol, because he puts down his full beer right before they go to the dinner table. Like, he's been hanging out and holding a beer, but has not taken a sip of it.
Yes.
So, but then, like, when he pours himself a drink later on, his wife doesn't even think about it for a second. Like, doesn't even look at it. Doesn't point it out to him, like, are you sure, or anything. So yeah. I was curious about his relationship to alcohol.
I think he I just kind of saw that him putting down that full beer was just an indication that he was having a good time at party. Like, he didn't just want to be there. Maybe he does have a problem with alcohol, so it seems weird that he would miss any chance to drink. But I think it was just a little kind of even personal protest. I don't think he wanted anyone to see that, but I think it was just him kind of telling himself, you're not having a good time. Like, let's do whatever we can to get out of here quickly.
All right. Or he just doesn't like warm counter beer.
No, British people love warm counter beer.
I know. Maybe he's the contrarian of the bunch.
In the national anthem, you can see one of the signs in one of the bars says hot beer. That is 100% true.
That's great.
It's a joke sign, though. It says, like, hot beer, lousy food, bad service, or something. But British people love room temperature beer.
Yeah.
That is quite the drinking binge he does go on, though. Like, they say they get home around midnight, and he's drinking then, and it appears at, like, 8 in the morning when everyone's getting...
Yeah.
That's a pretty fair amount of time.
Yeah.
Okay, so the entire history of you.
Mm-hmm.
We can start at the beginning. Mm-hmm. What did you think of the idea of the retrospective parenting cases?
So upsetting. This episode's so upsetting. Everything upsets me.
What's wrong with that morally, though?
I don't know. It's just upsetting.
Because it sounds awful right away. And yeah. Liam definitely has the reaction that, you know, my initial reaction was, are you okay with this? Like, is the firm okay with this idea ethically? I think it's just because those other lawyers present it as something so
obviously money. Acceptable.
No, as a way for them to make money, which it absolutely is. But, you know, the cases that they seem to be talking about are used as an example. I think really downplays it. You know, they're kind of joking about it. They're like, oh, mommy didn't hug me enough, so I didn't get attention, so now my wages aren't that good. But that can be a real problem. Like, bad parenting is a real problem, even if it's not physical sexual abuse. Like, there's a lot of ways to be a bad parent that if you had seen someone's whole life, it can become more clear.
Yeah.
Like, I just think of cases of – I mean, let's say there was an actual case of physical abuse that they just didn't report till 10 years later. You go back and watch the tape, and I think everyone would agree it would still be okay to send those parents to jail.
Mm-hmm.
So why is it different if it's an emotional thing?
The thing is, once you introduce a new technology, you can't foresee how it will be used, right? And that's sort of why it sets it. The episode probably sets it up with that at the beginning, because even though it's presented in a way that our ostensible hero is not into, we quickly see the other ramifications of having this technology. Like, it's just going to ruin different lives, you know? And I don't know. It's just sort of, I don't have a fully formed thing, but I just sort of the idea that the consequences of choosing to do something can never be foreseen, you know? And particularly with technology, somebody will always find a different way to sort of abuse it.
Yeah. And it seems like these cases, these retrospective parenting cases, are very new. Like, this sounds like the fact that Liam, who I guess is a good lawyer with a good job, mm-hmm. hasn't even heard of it yet. Like, yeah. this is something that they're really just cracking into. So I see what you mean about just not knowing where it's going, and this being the first time. It's like, oh, wait, this person has literally a tape a video recording of their entire life.
Yeah.
How can we make money? How can anyone make money off this? And for a lawyer, it's this parenting case.
Yeah. And the question I had was, because it seems like a technology that's been around, but everybody we see in this episode in any sort of meaningful way appears to be kind of rich and removed from society. So I don't know if the episode ever says how widespread this memory thing is, like how, you know, like at what stage of the smartphone are we, you know, who can afford
it? Yeah.
How new is it? So, and I mean, are we at a point where kids have it automatically, you know? I guess not, if it's a new thing, the retrospective parenting cases. But I just don't think we ever really get shown the advances in the technology. Although, yeah. I guess if he's at an airport and being asked pretty like, oh, we assume we can ask you this. I guess it is kind of widespread.
Yeah. Asking for the rewind. Yeah, and I think my guess, and I'm not basing this off anything, but I think it's probably a 5 to 10 year old technology at this point. Mm-hmm. And it's probably expensive. And yes, everyone we see appears to be very rich. So mm-hmm. It can be understood that not everyone has it. But again, there is quite a reaction to that one dinner guest saying she doesn't have it.
Yeah.
Even before they found out that it's been gouged, like just. When someone says she doesn't have a grain, everyone's really surprised.
Yes.
That could be rich. That could be a rich people.
Exactly. I think that is kind of a rich person thing.
It's like saying I don't have a yacht to some people.
Yeah, that's true. The one thing that scene reminded me of is my general apprehension of having a smartphone, and that I still kind of don't. And people react similarly to that now. And yeah. So that was sort of where I was thinking, oh, okay, so, you know, if this technology is introduced in 2007, we're at 2014 now, you know, of smartphone time. You're right, probably like 5 to 10 years. Something that you can easily see why everybody is into, and why those people can't see why you're not, you know?
Yeah. But it seems like there's been a bit of time to have some kind of a backlash to it, because when she says, and I don't think we ever get that female dinner guest name that Jonas ends up sleeping with.
Yeah, it's something close to Helen, like okay. Hallam or something.
Let's go with Helen for now. Yeah. But when she reveals that she is grainless, someone says, you know, that's a big thing now, going grainless. So it seems like it has become like, It is mainstream, but there's a kind of an alt trendy little subculture that's going without it. And this wasn't her choice. You know, as I said, she was gouged. Another little slang thing that I love, that it's just a word. You know, she doesn't say like, oh, I had my thing forcibly removed against my will. Like, it's just one word and everybody gets it and you move on. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's kind of a backlash. It seems like people have had an experience like Liam's or like Fee, even, where something's blown up, like something's been terrible for them, or they find themselves not enjoying things in the moment because they're too busy, you know, reflecting on things in the past. So it seems like it was very big, or is very big, but still there has already been kind of a backlash to it. We're already at a point where it's like, oh yeah, do we really want to? Mm-hmm. And some people don't. Mm-hmm. Including hookers, apparently. I just that kind of choice she has and the reaction that everyone takes to it. Mm-hmm. And at the beginning, they advertise a 3-decade backup. So it seems like it hasn't always had such a long a long history, such a big memory, I guess.
Yeah.
And, you know, in that same advertising, they're advertising more senses. So I guess we can understand that, I guess it's just video and audio for now, but, you know, now we're going to get sounds, mm-hmm. or smells and feels and things like that. And the their motto there is memory is for living, mm-hmm. which I think is a really, really weird slogan. Because it seems so kind of antithetical. And I guess to kind of go back to that old man that's had a few too many drinks, I think that they would say that's not what living is. Like, memory is what people do now, where they're spending all their time taking pictures or looking back through pictures and looking back on memories. That's not living. That's every time you're doing that, you're not enjoying life. You're wasting a bit more time with something that's already happened, which I agree to in some ways, but in many ways I disagree with.
Okay. Yeah. I think I'm in the same position, maybe just sort of slightly different. But the thing that this episode reminded me or made me think of a lot was, you know, just the phrase "pics or it didn't happen," you know, like, yeah. And how the way I think about one of the main reasons why I don't like having the internet in my pocket at all times is because I sort of feel like the fact that we don't need to remember anything like anymore is it's because everything's easily verifiable, you know, like who is the dad from Frasier, you know, like, oh, I can look that up in 5
John
seconds.
Mahoney.
Yeah, exactly.
I Googled it really quickly. Well,
but yeah, and it's just sort of there's actually like a, you know, anytime sort of a question comes up in conversation, you can very, like, even if you're just sitting at a bar with a couple of your friends, you can very easily, one of you will be able to look it up. And there's a great opening for How I Met Your Mother episode, like, about that, how you don't need to know anything because all the information is in your pocket. And I just sort of feel like that sort of, at least for me, not being able to immediately check everything, I think is really helpful to my brain, because I like being bothered by what was the name of the dad from Frasier for 8 hours before I get home to my computer. But I just feel like in the long term that will have some benefit to me. You know, I can't necessarily break down what, but I don't know. I feel like being able to be bothered by something that you can't immediately look up is helpful.
Yeah. Well, no, I can tell you right now, you are right about that, because I've seen studies where people kind of doing research, you retain more knowledge when it's something that you don't think you're going to have accessible. Like, if it's something that you can just look up right away versus this is the one time you're going to be able to know that, your brain does a better job of retaining things that it's exposed to in the context that you're not always going to have this available. So you are on the right track as far as how brains function. And when we into, you know, to extrapolate that, if we always think everything is accessible at all times, we're never going to have the need to remember or know anything real.
Yeah. Well, if you can just remember how to look it up, then that's good enough.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, most arguments about facts and things like that get to about 30 seconds and people are like, why aren't we looking this up yet? Like, why are we even having this argument? And, you know, they're right. There is a certain way to find this answer, but yes, it does have repercussions neurologically. So there you go. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The one thing that I like about the way they kind of frame this technology right away is, you know, Liam, as you said, our ostensible hero, our protagonist, the one that, you know, the one you spend the most time with in any story is normally the one you are relating to.
Yeah.
The way that in that meeting he has right off the bat, they say, we hope to look forward to seeing you again, or whatever that is. And we immediately see him replay that. And it's not a positive experience, but it's something that you would want to know. Like, because I remember the first time watching this episode, I thought I heard that, but maybe I just wasn't paying attention. Maybe I, you know, misheard it. So it lets us, it's the way he rewinds it, does a redo and lets us hear it. At least for me, like, it satisfied my curiosity right away. Like, mm-hmm. It was something at the back of my head that was nagging me. And so all of a sudden, this technology is seen as something positive. Mm-hmm. Like, before you have a chance to really think of all the repercussions and before the next, you know, 50 minutes show how it can ruin people's lives, it immediately like was a relief. Like it was something that brought me a positive experience of saying like, oh, okay, good. Like, I like that. I'm glad I got a chance to hear that again. That was a positive thing. This is a good technology. And then, you know, the rest of the episode is kind of how that can go the other way as well. Yeah. Of it overall, because
sorry, you cut out a bit.
Oh, sorry. What do you think of it overall? Because it does kind of end up being a positive and a negative. Like, his life seems pretty ruined. He does lose his family, but he's no longer raising someone else's kid.
Mm-hmm. I think because we do get clues that he sort of had suspicions, anyways. I feel like this happens. It just sort of. It would happen eventually anyway. I feel like it just sort of happened quicker this way. And
does this happen without this technology, though?
I think so.
I think if it happens, it's before the kid's born.
I don't necessarily know about that.
Okay.
Yeah. But because it doesn't really say how long he's had a suspicion, but I feel like if you're smart enough to be a lawyer and have already gotten a suspicion, it's just sort of a matter of time that... until you sort of figure out whether or not that suspicion is real. But yeah, I don't think it's necessarily a negative or necessarily a positive at the end. I think my reaction to it is that it is a negative, just because I love that line, not everything that isn't true is a lie, Liam. Because,
hello.
Yeah, and regardless of how Liam reacts to it, I think it's a great line. And
wait, what's so good about that line, though?
I just like,
because it sounds so counterintuitive.
Oh yeah, exactly. That's how Liam reacts to it. I just sort of like the. Because I mean, you sort of think about memories that you have. There's the conversation about it early on, where the woman says half the organic memories you have are junk, not trustworthy. You can implant false memories just by asking leading questions in therapy. I agree with that. I believe that's true. I don't trust my memories, but I trust that they are sort of what made me into whoever I am now. And I sort of feel like
that makes them real because their effect is real.
Exactly. Yeah. Their actual realness is unverifiable, and that's fine. Like, it's like that's the all my one, like, my biggest frustration with life is not being able to check my memory, but I also realize how many problems I would have if I could, you know.
Yeah.
it would create more problems than it would solve. 100%.
Yeah. It also leads to having very gross looking sex.
Oh, that scene's so upsetting.
Oh, I do not like that one at all. Yeah, every time their eyes go weird like that, it's a little uncomfortable, but the sex is just the worst.
Yeah, I mean it's not even the eyes. The eyes were whatever. It's just like the way that scene, the story of that scene is told is just it's just such a bummer.
Yeah. We talked about his visit to the airport there and how they kind of just make him run back through his last 24 hours, last 7 days or whatever. Mm-hmm. It definitely has a value for airport security and police.
Yep.
Like, the police immediately say to Helen when she calls in, when Liam's, you know, threatening to stab a King Dormouse dick of Marrakesh with the bottle there, Jonas.
Yeah.
Oily dude, man.
Yeah. no, we understand who you're talking about. Thank you.
Okay, just making sure. Chris Martin. yeah,
he didn't have any like social messages written on the back of his hand, so I don't know if it's Chris Martin.
Yeah, the cops say, you know, send over a feed. Like, it's so valuable for so many reasons. The same way having surveillance everywhere in the world at every stoplight is kind of good and kind of horrible at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Doing anything wrong, you know, if you're not hiding anything, you shouldn't care that there's cameras everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I think this is kind of not so much from the police angle, but an example of why constant recording isn't the best.
Yeah.
And I remember within a few days of seeing this episode the first time, I was hanging out with someone and there was a disagreement over what time we'd actually said we were going to meet up. And so I was like, no, I was pretty sure you said this. And she said, no, I was pretty sure it was this. And so we both took out our phones and started scrolling through our messages looking for exactly what time had been established. And it just made me think of this. And I immediately got really uncomfortable. And I was like, yeah, I don't care. Sure, I was late. Fine, bye. You win. Let's never do this again. And
I'll take this loss.
Yeah, this is totally fine. I'm not Liam or Fee. So let's just move on. Ugh. So is this your favorite episode?
Yes, I think so.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I think it's definitely the most interesting to think about after the fact, for sure.
Yeah, and it's also something that I mentioned it at the beginning of our discussion of it, something that I think about all the time that was presented. And I mean, like, say we talk about the 15 Million Merits episode. I also think about some element of that type of his speech or whatever, some element of that. I think about very frequently, but it didn't sort of provide me with anything that I felt was new. Whereas the entire history of you is about something I think about all the time and gave me new things to think about.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I think it's a well done episode. Like,
yeah. Oh yeah.
Not just the themes that are there, but I think overall, it's good, and Liam's the best.
One little detail I love is when they're watching the memories and how Fee has crimped hair. I thought that was so funny.
I love that too.
It's so funny.
So that should say, hopefully this technology is more than 3 years old then, if she's had crimped hair for any of it.
Yeah, I sort of did some research, and that's sort of like early to mid-2000s. That was like Britney Spears was doing that. It was okay.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I still have the biggest crush.
That's the thing I did the most research on for all of Black Mirror is when crimped hair was the thing.
When was crimping cool? great. Good stuff. Yeah. I like when he shows the babysitter the footage and he's got the pedophile babysitter joke.
Yeah.
He's like, just ignore that.
Yeah, nice touch. And when she edits off the word sometimes, when he says sometimes you're a bitch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and then plays it right back to him twice.
Yeah.
Ugh, wonderful stuff. Yeah, I enjoy this series does it a lot, but just kind of those last kind of lingering moments of that episode where not much happens for the last 20 seconds. Like, he's already
ripping
his empty house, the sink. Yeah, so I don't know. I'm still split on whether or not, like, you know, ignorance is bliss, but to be deceived about something so big for so long that she knew about, I think is, you kind of want to know the truth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, not everything that's not a lie is true. So who knows, right? Or whatever the fuck that means.
Yeah, let's do another bowl.
Yeah, so that's the end of season one. Series one.
Thanks, James.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yes. Should we just plow right through this and get to season two?
Yeah.
It's been like an hour.
It has. All right, fine. Let's take this to two parts. Let's think on the fly. Let's do this. We'll be back with the second part whenever the second part goes on iTunes.
Thanks for listening to The MacGuffin Men. Be sure to check out themacguffinmen.com for supplementary links, articles, and more. Thanks for listening.